Barker, Barnhart, Barnhart Burger, Burger Buyer, Buyer Bonamici, Boone, Boone Boquist, Boquist Bruin, Buckley, Buckley Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cameron Cannon, Clem, Clem Cowan, Cowan Dallum, Dingfelder, Dingfelder Chris Edwards, Chris Edwards David Edwards, David Edwards Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Galizio Gerard, Gerard Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilliam Gilman, Gerard, Gerard Greenlick, Hannah, Hannah Holvey, Holvey Hunt, Hunt Jensen, Jensen Comp, Comp Kotek, Krieger, Krieger Crummel, Lim, Lim McPherson, McPherson Maurer, Minnis, Minnis Morgan, Morgan Nathanson, Nelson, Nelson Nolan, Olson, Olson Reed, Richardson, Riley, Riley Roblin, Roblin Rosenbaum, Rosenbaum Schaffler, Schaffler Scott, Scott Shields, Greg Smith, Greg Smith Patty Smith, Patty Smith Thatcher, Tomei, Tomei Wisnet, Wisnet Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Barnhart, Boone, Boquist, Buckley, Cameron, Clem, Cowan, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Galizio, Gerard, Gilliam, Gerard, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Krieger, Lim, McPherson, Minnis, Morgan, Nelson, Olson, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Tomei, excuse for business of the house, Bonamici, Bruin, Butler, Cannon, Flores, Gelzer, Gilman, Greenlick, Kotek, Maurer, Richardson.
Please do stay on the floor. We're awaiting a quorum. We're about eight short, and hopefully that'll be remedied shortly. A quorum is present. We will now resume with the special order of business scheduled for 4 p.m. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2603 relating to Legislative Assembly website.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2603. Oh, Representative Thatcher.
Colleagues, it's my honor to present House Bill 2603 this afternoon, along with my co-carrier, the representative from House District 51.
Colleagues, I will ask you to tone down the conversations now, and please give Representative Thatcher your full attention.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Permission to use a visual aid.
Representative Thatcher asked for her unanimous consent to use a visual aid. Is there an objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you. As you can see, we have a big screen set up, and if you'll indulge me a minute, I'll have staff start up our demonstration project, which, from what I'm told, is the first time ever such a demonstration has been used as part of a floor debate on a bill. Yes, could be a reason why. Well, maybe that's why. We felt it was a fitting way of showing members the reason for this legislation. It's hard to describe. It's easier to show to you, as was done in committee. This bill is about the kinds of materials we legislators post on our own websites, and more specifically, the kinds of information we link to. Let's just pick someone's website, just maybe Representative Flores' website. As we're clicking through here, each one of these links is called a hyperlink. And I'm sure most of you have clicked on plenty of these and maybe just didn't know what they are technically called, and that's what this bill is about. Hyperlink is an electronic link providing direct access from one distinctively marked place in a website to another. A year ago, we weren't allowed to have these on our legislative websites because we were told that all sorts of chaos and controversy was going on over what we could and couldn't use for links. For example, one representative could not use a link to the Boy Scouts, and I was told that the smart reading program was off limits. And yes, there can be legitimate reasons for some of these concerns, some dealing with elections law and others dealing with ethics laws. In March of last year, all 90 websites for individual legislators were torn down. Legislative Council recommended a policy that allowed nothing except government links. At the time, there were nearly 1,600 links posted on these websites not related to government, and some related to political sites, which probably violated state law. But there were stories in the paper about the situation, and I got this email from a constituent saying, banning legislators from posting links set a bad precedent of censorship and abridges free speech. I encourage our legislators to post responsibly in a way that shows you are interested in helping Oregonians make this a better world. I'm going to stop now, urge your I vote, and turn this over to my co-carrier, good representative from District 51.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I should add that all along this has been a complaint-driven process, and so far there have been absolutely no complaints. After all the heartburn died down last summer and the websites were up and running, the Legislative Administration Committee held a meeting and decided it was best to wait and see if a remedy could be come forward out of the 2007 legislative session. So here we are today on a bill that impacts each one of us. We knew we wanted to have a bill which made the buck stop with the individual member. The legislator should be the one held accountable if they allow something unethical or illegal to be posted on their website. And we knew we wanted a bill which exempted staff from any liability. A couple of weeks after the meeting last summer, Legislative Administration put out a memo which basically did just that. And I don't even have to ask permission to use a visual aid because it's right here. Around 65 of us signed this acknowledgement. It allows you, your staff, and the employees in information system and legislative administration to post the items you want on your site. And if something's not right, the legislator is the one who will face the consequences. But this was seen as a temporary measure. I think Representative Crummell is going to pick up the ball at this point.
Further discussion, Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
And how's my shadow art up here? Is it very good? Okay. Thank you, colleagues. As many of you know, I spent several sessions and interims on the Information Technology Committee, and I've also worked for a high-tech or online company in one form or another for the past 6 years. When I learned about this problem last year, I was more than a little frustrated. So we took input from several members on both sides of the aisle to put this bill together. I just wanted to make a couple of observations about the co-carriers have not touched on. One is other branches of government. Dozens and dozens of state agencies use the Oregon.gov website or other sites and have links to all sorts of places to go, as do other elected officials like the governor. We talked to DAS, and the only policy they have regarding links to other sites is that they should be scrutinized closely to present clear, current, and quality information. That's it. The Public Commission on the Legislature voiced their concerns about better public access and the use of the legislature's website. Public information and outreach is critical. We talked a lot about restoring credibility with average citizens, and one way we can do that is making our technology more user-friendly and offering our constituents links to resources in the community. I think it's possible to do that and still be a responsible elected official and stay within the law. If we put lots of limits on what we can do with our websites, then I'm afraid that members will just use their own private websites and bypass the state system entirely. We already know that some legislators are doing that. I think this is a sensible solution that has safeguards for staff and a good dose of personal responsibility for legislators, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thatcher, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to say that this
came out. Excuse me. Apparently, at the last second here, Representative Barnhart got in the queue. My apologies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Very briefly, the law in this area has been obsolete ever since the Internet that was developed. The restrictions placed on the legislative websites as a result of the current law do not take into account current practice in the use of the Internet. This bill does not go far enough, but it is an improvement over the current practice, and I urge an aye vote.
Now, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I just wanted to quickly mention this came out of the Elections, Ethics, and Rules Committee on a unanimous vote, an enthusiastic unanimous vote, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2603 should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system.
Do you want them to get that?
Representative Riley votes aye. Representative Holvey votes aye. Representative Greg Smith votes aye. Representative Galizio. Representative Galizio. Representative Galizio is off the floor. Representative Hunt votes aye. Representative Riley. You voted aye, but we don't have you recorded yet. We'll get you here. Representative Minnis. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Representative Minnis is off the floor. And Representative McPherson votes aye. House Bill 2603, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Crummell, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Request to go back to courtesies.
Representative Crummell asks for unanimous consent to return to courtesies. Is there an objection? Seeing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At my desk with me is another one of my staff people. She is one of my wonderful interns. She told me to say that. This is Karen Schwint, and stand up, Karen, so everybody can see you. Karen graduated from Canby High School in 2005, but she grew up over in the Charbonneau area of Wilsonville, where her parents still live and are constituents of mine. She is now a junior at Oregon State University, majoring in political science, international studies, and Spanish with a minor in Russian. Don't ask. I have no idea how she can do all that stuff, but she's, and plus be here. She plans to go on to law school. That's too bad. After she graduates. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding for the lawyers in the room. I have a lot of friends that are lawyers. This is her first session at the Capitol, and we are very pleased to have her. This summer, she is going to be studying in Quito, Ecuador, and then in the fall and winter terms of next year, she will be studying in Spain. So we welcome her to the Capitol, and she's been with us all session. This is the first time, however, that she's been here when I could introduce her during one of our afternoon sessions. And so thank you, Mr. Speaker, for allowing me to do that.
Thank you. Further courtesies? We now come back to the second special order of business. Clerk will read the memorial.
HJM 11, urging Congress to extend deadline and provide adequate funding for implementation of Federal Real ID Act of 2005.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of House Joint Memorial 11A. Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Joint Memorial 11 urges Congress to look at the Real ID Act, and I consider it an unfunded mandate. The Congress said you will check driver's licenses, and actually, as far as I'm concerned, we're instigating a national identification program. And that may be fine, but I wish that they'd call it that and not tie it to driver's licenses. But that's what's occurring. In Oregon, we renew our licenses every 8 years. To implement this, say that we did this in 2010, it'd be 2018 before we'd have all of our licenses sync with the federal program. Currently, they've given us until 2013. The big cost to the state is if we have to do that rotation in less than 8 years. Say we have to do it in 4 years, then we have to increase the staff at all the DMV offices to be able to get compliance within 4 years. This resolution says don't implement the act until you give us the money enough to do it, and then if you do implement it, give us the tools, particularly a database, so we can determine who is here legally and who is not. That's still a big question. Another issue is we do not even have the administrative rules yet. We have the initial ones out, but they are not finalized yet. So it's pretty difficult for us to implement Real ID until we have that. I urge your yes vote on this. I know it's a difficult one, but that's where I am. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the memorial.
To the memorial.
Now, colleagues, most of you are aware of the firestorm that the Real ID Act has sparked across the nation. Proponents of the act argue that's a necessary tool to protect against terrorism. Others disagree, and they raise additional concerns over its privacy issues and the implementation questions and costs. Now, I don't rise today to argue against the real idea's effectiveness against terrorism, nor do I speak to any privacy concerns I may have. I'll save that for another time. No, today I rise to join with my colleagues in the Transportation Committee to speak about the financial burden that the Real ID drops like an anvil upon our cash-strapped state. This is the same concern that House Joint Memorial 11 speaks to. Now, a number of states have refused to comply with the mandate, instead telling Congress and the President to place the Real ID Act elsewhere. We're not doing that today. We're instead asking Congress simply to fully fund the program. Under this hastily and poorly crafted act, states are required to meet a whole host of new requirements for issuing IDs and driver's licenses. The Real ID Act would require Oregon to remake its driver's licenses, restructure many of our computer databases and other systems, and create an extensive new document storage system. It would require us to set up an interstate data sharing network, which would also require complex administrative, technical, and security measures. It includes a mandate that states verify the issuance, validity, and completeness of every birth certificate, immigration document, and any other document presented at DMVs as part of an application for a Real ID card. It would require us to expand our DMV payroll, initiate or expand employee training in such areas as security, document verification, and immigration law, and initiate or expand security clearance procedures for their workers. And the kicker? The expert's best guess is that the Real ID Act will cost upwards of $11 billion nationally to implement. $11 billion nationally. The closest comparison we have is a study in Washington that found that the five-year implementation cost in that state would reach $251 million. The state of Oregon simply does not have the clarity of direction or the funds to comply with the Real ID Act at this time. The Department of Homeland Security has itself failed to comply with the act in a timely fashion. Homeland Security was supposed to issue guidelines and rules for Real ID compliance last summer, but they didn't do so until a month and a half ago. And the rules that they finally came up with are subpar and do not provide nearly the level of clarity that our state needs to implement the act. House Joint Memorial 11 is a reasonable request from this body that Congress provide the necessary tools to implement the Real ID Act. Despite all of the issues that have been raised, adequate direction, time, and funding, Congress and the President continue to expect us to comply with this act by next year. Let's send a message that we do not accept this. Let's stand up for our state and tell our federal colleagues that we will not succumb to this unfunded mandate. I urge your support for HJM 11. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Colleagues, I think this memorial runs contrary to the direction, at least contrary to the direction my constituents want our state to go on this
issue. To the memorial.
To the memorial, thank you. How many of us in this chamber campaigned on the issue of making sure illegal aliens aren't getting driver's licenses here? Yet here we are with a memorial to Congress telling them that we're just not really quite ready to take this step. Even in the Sunday editorial section of a local paper, comments were made about how the state is going to deny benefits to illegal immigrants, but no mention of the benefit of a driver's license. And let's remember that this act was born out of recommendations from the 9/11 Commission. There are serious national security issues at stake, and we should be working towards compliance rather than engaging in an exercise of foot dragging, in my opinion. There's a number of things that are being addressed currently that are talked about in the bill. Some people are worried that some will not be able to obtain a driver's license because they are unable to locate necessary documents. You know, we went through this last year when it came to a requirement from the federal government to verify legal status of Medicaid recipients, and we came up with an exemption process, and that is exactly what the federal government wants us to do with the Real ID Act. We would come up as a state with an exemption process for those situations where ID or verification documents like birth certificates might be difficult to obtain. In this memorial, they want us to extend the deadline for implementation. Well, we can request an extension. They're recognizing that it's difficult for the states to come in complete compliance by May 2008, and we can request an extension, like mentioned earlier, to 2013 to be completely compliant. If you want to make sure that we're not, if we don't have driver's licenses that are valid for 8 years, having to be renewed sooner, we can change the law to say that driver's licenses will be valid for a shorter period of time, therefore addressing that issue that the non-compliant driver's licenses can expire earlier so that you do not have that issue of that was addressed earlier. Privacy considerations. There's out of the summary for the proposed rules, it says a frequently heard concern relates to the amount of additional information the federal government will have about driver's license holders and what the federal government will do with that data. In fact, however, neither the Real ID Act nor these proposed regulations give the federal government any greater access to information than it had before. Moreover, there is no information about a licensee that the federal government will store that it is not already required to store. There's not going to be an additional layer of government having access to your information any more than is currently the case. To address the further, it goes on to say that to address the privacy concerns posed by such a service, the database is referred to, the proposed rules make it clear that this service will only be allowed to enable state DMVs to query federal systems, not the other way around. Right now, there's a couple systems in place that states use. One's called the SOLV, or Social Security Online Verification. It's provided through AMBA, the American, oh boy, something about Motor Vehicles Association. Most states, not including Oregon, access this database just to make sure that a person who is submitting their Social Security number is the person belonging to that Social Security number. There's also another system which enables one to verify someone's legal presence or their...
Representative Hannah yields.
Thank you, Representative. There are also other databases that the federal government allows departments of motor vehicles around the United States to access. One's called the SAVE program that would allow verification of eligibility for things such as state benefits or federal benefits where they're required to be here legally. That would be expanded. They would have databases for DMVs to access other federally issued documents. They're also anticipating something called EVE, which would allow, I apologize for not knowing what that stands for right this very second, but it would allow states to access another state's birth certificate database so that they can verify that, yeah, Kim Thatcher was born in Pocatello, Idaho on this day. Yeah, shazam. So as part of there's going to be some things put in place that will make it less expensive. They aren't in place yet, but as they become developed, we need to be working towards coming compliant with this and not pass a memorial that leans toward delay and procrastination. But whether or not this memorial passes, I hope that we will come back this session with a bill that requires lawful presence to access the privileges of our society, including the privilege of getting driver's licenses. And if anything, this session that we do deserves an emergency clause. It is this protection for Oregon's legal residents. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the memorial.
To the memorial.
Colleagues, we know that memorials send a message. Well, this is the wrong message to send to our Congress. It's pretty symbolic, and it tells the whole world how Oregon as a state feels about protecting the integrity of our main source of personal identification. What kind of message are we sending with this bill? And by the way, is it a conflicting message? Because coming soon to a House chamber near you is another bill that basically says we will enact real ID. So we cannot have it both ways. If you vote yes today, you'll be in a position to vote no very soon. We're talking about national security here. The recent plot to attack Fort Dix, New Jersey, by six Islamic militants, three were illegal immigrants. I read to you. In New Jersey, six men were arrested for plotting to kill Americans at Fort Dix. Three were illegal aliens who are believed to have crossed the border from Mexico near Brownsville, Texas. These men had produced driver's licenses in untold number of times. They had so many traffic violations that their driver's licenses had been suspended a combined 54 times. 54 times. In order for them to be suspended that many times, they had to have their driving privileges reinstated over and over and over. They had to produce these licenses over and over when they committed traffic violations that put American citizens in jeopardy, and they also had been convicted of some low-level drug offenses. We do need national standards. Real ID gives the states the opportunity to set minimum standards for identity protection. With all the ID theft going on in Oregon, we need to be proactive in adopting these new security measurements. Last session, we jumped into Senate Bill 640 with a new biometric data collection. Oregon should already be ahead of a lot of other states in that regard. If we don't get in line with new federal standards, then perhaps the feds will move here and start up their own program for identifying Oregon citizens. Real ID isn't perfect. No one said it was. But it was fully debated in the Congress, and any changes can and should be made at the federal level. We should not settle for less. We should try to work with our federal partners to implement the best system with the best safeguards possible to protect sensitive information and to ensure people who are not here legally are not getting access to driver's licenses. Yes, there have been a number of states, less than two handfuls of states, that have debated this issue. They've introduced legislation, but only Maine has passed legislation to fully turn the other direction from implementing Real ID. We do not want Oregon driver's licenses to be rejected by the feds. We don't want every Oregonian to have to go and get a passport to hop on a plane to go the other side of Oregon or to Chicago or to visit a federal office building to file your taxes. Oregon is one of the eight states that grants driver's licenses without checking for legal presence first. Any one of only four or five that does not verify Social Security numbers of driver's license applicants. Driver's licenses are, and this is a term that causes some people some heartburn, breeder documents. Once you have one, you can use it to register to vote, open a checking account, get a library card, apply for credit, etc., etc. What about the cost? We don't need to have millions of federal dollars in hand today to begin the work. Actually, the Department of Motor Vehicles testified the longer we wait, the more it will cost. And then last February, we saw published, well, actually prior to that, last year, we got a figure from ODOT that said Real ID would cost about $10 million. Then in February of this year, we saw published reports citing between $23 and $27 million. Then recently, DMV testified that the cost was up to $65 million. This sounds a little bit like a DMV computer program or perhaps the tram in Portland. In any event, the cost of doing nothing is far more expensive.
Just a moment, Representative. Representative Morgan yields.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, the cost of doing nothing is far more expensive when it comes to identity theft and the cost to our economy. It really runs into the billions of dollars. There is some question about, well, isn't this a states' rights issue? Well, I will tell you, folks, we do a lot of things in our states that have federal imperatives. Interstate commerce, this is what we're talking about as we travel back and forth. The feds already have responsibility for regulating commercial driver's licenses and requiring Social Security numbers. Oh, what about food stamps, Medicaid, Medicare? Or, like it or not, Department of Education and No Child Left Behind? Or what about HAVA, Help America Vote Act? That's a federal issue. What about agricultural standards and interstate commerce? What about time zones? What about banking regulations, Environmental Policy Act? We all love that one. What about federal contracting laws, the Brady Act in regard to gun ownership and background checks, or the National Highway Safety Standards, and the list goes on. We can't afford to wait much longer. We've been stalling around for 2 years already. Even Governor Kulongoski agrees, telling the press in mid-March, he's worried that if we don't take action this session to move towards compliance, we could be in danger of not being able to use the Oregon driver's license for federal purposes as soon as next May. Last session, we could have given ODOT legislative authority to move forward with whatever technical adjustments they needed to make and keep pushing ahead as the funding became available. We can make other changes in the February 2008 session, you know, that special session for the emergency, so no matter what we are, where we are, we're playing catch-up. ODOT can't do anything to check for citizenship or legal presence until we change the state law and give them the ability to do so. This is the least we can do this session. The feds have given us some breathing room by extending the deadline for compliance from May 2008 to May 2009, and if we apply for an extension this fall, we can provide an implementation strategy and start issuing the new driver's licenses by 2010. Then we can stretch out the transition period until 2013. In the Senate today, Senate Bill 424, minority report, passed. 27 yay, 1 nay. That action sends a message that the Oregon legislature does not want driver's licenses going to illegal immigrants. We should follow the Senate's lead and take the steps necessary to implement Real ID. With all the facts, not my opinions, with all the facts that you've heard, with all that is at risk that can jeopardize our citizens' rights to travel within our own country, to do routine business, to the economic impact to our state and to our country, I urge a no vote on House Joint Memorial 11A. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Giron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the memorial.
To the memorial.
As always, I will be brief. Colleagues, illegal immigration is a major problem. And I kind of looked through my records to find out just exactly how much we've done this session to curb illegal immigration. The answer, zero. The feds, how much have they done to curb illegal immigration? The answer, not a whole lot. This is going to be a problem that both the feds and the state have to work on, and we do need to secure our border. So I think we need, this is the wrong path to go on, as has been stated in the two previous speakers, and we need to get our act together and curb illegal immigration. And that's all I'm going to say. So I'd urge a no vote.
Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, or the memorial.
To the memorial.
Colleagues, this bill came out of our committee, and temporary rules or draft rules were announced, the memorial was adjusted. I do want to clarify that there are really no inconsistencies between passing this and the other bill we have winding its way through the process, asking the department to go ahead and begin implementation. This basically asks for the money to do the implementation. This asks for a little more time, because at this point, even if we direct the department at the end of this session, if they have that direction to begin implementation, they're able to get an extension to December 31st of 09, we won't be able to implement this before the end of 2010. So there we're already behind. We then have 3 years to reprocess all driver's licenses in Oregon, which is probably about 3 million driver's licenses, if I remember the facts, but I could be a little off there. But it's a significant amount of driver's licenses. Some of the things that we need to protect ourselves from is that it is an unfunded mandate. At this point, the department is estimating a $69 million cost over the next three bienniums. Many of our citizens are going to have trouble getting this documentation they need. We have to protect ourselves from the crime of identity theft. Plus, there's going to be a nationwide database that will be developed. I think that one of the things that's been said is that there were many hearings on this. Well, colleagues, there were no hearings on Congress on this bill. There may have been recommendations from the 911 Commission, but there were no hearings. There were no discussions on the cost, the how effective this might be, and whether or not the country should have a national ID card instead of a driver's license to prove their citizenship. I think that it's important that we remember this is one of the first bills that you'll see that deals with immigration. There should be 8 more coming through the process that you'll have an opportunity to vote on. And so to be able to say that we have done nothing, we have been working on these bills, and we'll continue working on these bills, and hopefully we'll be seeing the Real ID bill come to the House soon for a vote. And on this one, I think this is an important message. This is a large unfunded mandate to the state, and we need to let Congress know that we expect some relief from this. And I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. Regarding the Federal Real ID Act of 2005, were there hearings in Congress?
No, there were no hearings in Congress. It was attached to a appropriation bill for the war in Iraq.
Follow-up, please, or let's see. Further question to the carrier?
Further question, does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
So, good representative, thank you so much for your tolerance. So are you saying that there was no debate in Congress on this bill?
That's correct, Representative, no debate.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Hunt.
To the memorial.
To the memorial.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's important that we remember what we're actually voting on here. I actually had to go back and pull out the bill again because in listening to the debate on the floor, it sounds like a completely different bill than the memorial that's actually before us. I would just remind us what this memorial, HJM 11A, actually says. It says that the Oregon Legislative Assembly supports the government of the U.S. in its campaign against terrorism, that we oppose implementation of technology requirements as part of the Real ID Act that compromise personal identifying information of Oregon drivers, that we urge Congress to provide appropriations to cover the cost of implementing the Real ID Act in Oregon, to provide an easily accessible, low-cost system that conforms to the Real ID Act, to extend the deadline for implementation until states have sufficient time, to extend the deadline for implementation of Real ID until privacy protections and safeguards are implemented, to allow for states to have sufficient time to come into compliance with the Real ID Act and to issue new Real ID Act compliant driver's licenses, permits, and ID cards to all Oregonians, and to take into account the burden on Oregonians to obtain the necessary identification documents. I am missing what the problem is in the language of that memorial, because that all seems pretty common sense. That seems like the kind of memorial that should actually garner 60 votes in this body. The minority report that was passed in the Senate has been referenced, and so I thought it was important to note that that minority report that was adopted, as my good friend said on, I think it was a 27-1 vote, specifically said that a state agency or program may not expend funds to implement the Real ID Act unless federal funds are received by this state and allocated an amount sufficient to cover the estimated cost to this state of implementing the Real ID Act. If anything, the minority report passed by the Senate imposes much greater restrictions than anything in HJM 11. HJM 11 is merely standing up for basic fairness, for basic process, for protecting against identity theft, and making sure that we do have time to come into compliance. As my friend from Springfield, the chair of the Transportation Committee, said, legislation is in process to implement the Real ID Act. That has been come out of the Transportation Committee. It's coming through the Ways and Means Committee right now and will be on the floor soon. So Real ID is being implemented in Oregon. The question here is, do we want to stand up for ourselves in this process? HJM 11 stands up for very common sense fairness, and I would urge our support.
Seeing no one else in the queue, Representative Flores is recognized for a second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I guess the problem is foot dragging or not. This bill, yes, indeed, acknowledge there are problems. That's why there are rules that are in the amendment process. That's why there's public input going on. This is foot dragging. What came out of the Senate was not foot dragging. This is not a proactive statement. A proactive statement is, no, we will not support House Joint Memorial 11. We need to do something now. And let me just take you to the Governor's ID Task Force report released last year. It had this to say. Oregon does not require people to prove legal presence as part of the eligibility process. This has led to Oregon becoming a magnet for people here illegally who find it increasingly difficult to obtain a driver's license in other states. This increases the risk of DMV will issue driver's licenses and ID cards to people who aren't who they say they are, and that more fraudsters will come to Oregon from out of state. So what's the problem? Doing nothing is the problem. An empty statement is the problem. This deserves a no vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gilman, would you like to close?
Yes, I would, briefly. This is about states' rights. This is about unfunded mandates. Yes, we have other unfunded mandates, but I think we should resist them all. I urge a yes vote.
Representative Wisnett requests a call of the House. He is joined by Representative Nelson, Representative Scott, Representative Dahlem, Representative Cannon, and Representative Barnhart. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, the sergeant-at-arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Burley Butler, Butler Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dahlem, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hanna, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Roblin Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnett, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Roblin.
All members are present. Representative Richardson, for which purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, request an oral roll call vote.
Representative Richardson requests an oral roll call vote. He is joined by Representative Gilman, Representative Krieger, Representative Dahlem, Representative Hanna, Representative Berger, and Representative Flores. Those of the opinion that the memorial should be adopted will say aye as your names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll alphabetically.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dahlem, Dingfelder.
Aye.
Chris Edwards.
Aye.
David Edwards.
Aye.
Esquivel.
No.
Flores. Galizio.
Aye.
Garrard.
No.
Gelzer. Gilliam.
No.
Gilman.
Aye.
Gerard.
No.
Greenlick.
Aye.
Hannah.
No.
Holvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Nolan. Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Voting no. Berger, Boquist, Bruin, Burley, Cameron, Dallum, Esquivel, Flores, Garrard, Gilliam, Gerard, Hanna, Jensen, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nelson, Olson, Richardson, Scott, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Wisnet, excused, Butler.
Ayes, 27 nays, one excused. House Joint Memorial 11A, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Colleagues, we will now move to House Bill 3541, which is brought forward and not on your immediate list. From this morning's list, 3541. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 3512, relating to Task Force on Agricultural Workforce Needs and declaring an emergency.
My apologies, colleagues. 3512 is correct. It was the first bill on your list this morning that was moved to the afternoon. Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3512A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill from the Agriculture Committee that has to do with making sure that we have the labor supply we need in our agricultural business. It requires a study, a task force, on agricultural needs. One of the things that has become apparent to me, and I think hopefully others will start to understand, is that the business of making money in agriculture is one that is very, very difficult. We have a number of programs out there to help, but no one has really systematically looked at what we can do to make sure that we help our farmers be successful in managing the people who work for them. We have had a couple of years where there were not enough farm workers to harvest all the crops. And when your crops rot in the fields, it isn't helping any of us. We need to solve the problem for farm work labor, and this task force is instructed to go forth and come up with some recommendations for you. I urge your support of House Bill 3512A.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Hey, thank you to the bill.
To the bill.
I am going to be supporting this. And I really appreciate the committee for considering an amendment be added addressing the existing federal visa program, H-2A, and how it is implemented here at the state level. I will state for the record that I have slight issue with one of the statements, whereas statements, saying that we need to develop a comprehensive immigration reform, and that has come to mean euphemistically amnesty in a lot of circles. And I just hope maybe that's not what's meant here, but I am going to be supporting this bill because our state can use it. There are about 2,500 employers who could potentially benefit from the H-2A visa program, and only 18 have registered in the past 3 years to do so. And I urge your aye vote on this measure. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
And for the record, I've taken a blood pressure pill. So I, too, Mr. Speaker and colleagues, will be supporting House Bill 3512, and I, as well, would like to express my appreciation to the chair and to the committee that considered inserting the deeper look at the H-2A program. And that whole issue had come to me from a constituent nursery owner who happens to be the largest nursery employer in Clackamas County. And as a result of working with implementing a federal program at the state level, and over a period of 4 years, they had spent over $1 million in order to jump through the requisite hoops at the state level. That was just an unfortunate experience, an unfortunate reality, which kind of soured them on the program, actually. But it is a very workable program that's working effectively in some states. So I, too, am very appreciative of the inclusion of that particular component to this bill, and will be supporting it as well. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close?
Thank you. Just a short statement. I can only speak for myself, but I do want to concur with speakers that said that comprehensive immigration reform was never discussed in ours as an issue for amnesty, and it certainly was not my intention, nor do I believe it was the intention of the bill. But I appreciate the question and just wanted to address it. We do need to help our agricultural industry understand how best to get farm workers in this state and make sure that all of the issues are discussed on the table and brought back to us. So I encourage your support for this bill. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Olson votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative McPherson votes aye. Shields votes aye. House Bill 3512A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2568, relating to motor vehicle event data recorders.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2568A. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, just before we went on break this morning, we talked about VRLs, and now we're going to talk about EDRs, event data recorders. The event data recorders are devices that are installed in some vehicles to record continuously the events that occur in the car, and they store a small portion so that if any accident occurs or any other untoward event occurs, those last few events that occurred before the accident will be recorded for use. This bill specifies that that event data recorder that's in your car belongs to you, not someone else. The measure provides for retrieval and use of the recorded data without consent of the owner under specified circumstances, however. Those circumstances include law enforcement investigations, insurance investigations, and instances where health and safety are concerned if there's a court order. This bill does not affect services such as OnStar and LoJack. Thank you very much. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Riley, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Merkley, how do you vote? Merkley votes aye. House Bill 2568A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2584, relating to education, declared an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2584A. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Honorable colleagues, I bring you House Bill 2585 from our Education Committee with unanimous vote. House Bill 2585 will create another task force with the Department of Education to make recommendations about how to increase and improve civics and financial education in K-12 public schools and report back to the legislature by October the 1st, 2008. The bill was amended to allow the Speaker of the House and the Senate President to appoint members to the task force and reduce the members from 12 to 9 to keep the cost under $50,000. The task force members will represent school administrators, civics teachers, finance teachers, teachers members of the labor union, school district boards, students, business leaders, and others with civics and financial education expertise. I would like to recognize two groups who are major supporters of civics and financial management education. First, the Classroom Law Project has an outstanding program to increase civics education, and the Credit Unions Association has programs across the nation teaching young people about financial literacy. With leadership by the Classroom Law Project and the Credit Unions Association of Oregon on this task force, I am confident that we can develop a successful plan to increase and improve civics and financial education in Oregon's K-12 public education. I introduced a bill to require one-half credits of civics and one-half credit of financial management for high school graduation, effective on or before July the 1st, 2011. It died in committee, but hopefully this bill will help produce to create some process to provide these two essential education requirements for our youth. Our nation's and state's success as a young democracy depends upon our youth's understanding of our political system, based upon programs like the Classroom Law Project. Also, our economic success depends upon our people and youth obtaining financial literacy, like the Credit Union Successful Program provides. I urge your yes vote on 2583.
Further discussion, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I rise in strong support of House Bill 2584, and I support both aspects, the financial education and the civics education. I'm going to speak briefly to the civics education portion. I've seen firsthand, as a parent and a community volunteer, how much students can benefit from learning civics. The good representative from rural Deschutes County mentioned the Classroom Law Project, and that's an organization I've been involved with for a little more than a decade. That organization was, quote, founded on the belief that the best way to preserve democracy is to teach democracy, and the best way to teach democracy is to incorporate the lessons and principles of democracy into the school curriculum. Classroom Law Project does that in many ways. I've seen thousands of students truly have life-changing experiences by getting involved with programs like Mock Trial, We the People, touring the courthouse, and of course the Capitol. And you may see some of them around tomorrow, some of the students who are involved in some of these excellent civics programs. Now, last year, the Classroom Law Project did an Oregon civics survey, and I'd like to thank the representative from Clackamas, Damascus, Boring, and Estacada for getting that going. The Oregon Civics Survey talked with almost 800 high school students, and they learned that, for example, despite taking a course in U.S. government, students' knowledge of structures and functions of government was modest at best. In fact, they got about a D on a grading scale on their civics education. And so the survey recommended that, among other things, all Oregon schools should be encouraged to assess their current civic education practices and identify ways to strengthen them. A state-funded teacher professional development program for civic education should be developed and implemented, and further research should be conducted. Colleagues, this bill will go a long way to doing some of that research to find out some of the best ways that we can improve and enhance civic education across Oregon. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Wisnett, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to clarify, I guess in my presentation I incorrectly identified the bill as 2585 and 85-3. We are talking about House Bill 2584, and I hope you'll vote yes.
Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2584 should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2584A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2606, relating to education and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2606A. Representative Krummel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, colleagues. Like we haven't been here all afternoon. House Bill 2606, the high school graduation bill, comes out of the House Education Committee on an 8-1 vote. This bill directs school districts to allow a student to to allow a student to graduate early when, with the request of the student and consent of the parent, the student has met all of the state and local requirements for graduation. If you look around the building, you will find a few of our own members' staffs or a sibling of a staff member who have been able to accomplish graduating early. But if you were to ask them, they would probably tell you that the process of graduating early was not easy. First, they had to send a letter to the superintendent, and then they had to send another letter to the school board. They and their parent probably had to appear before the school board, and then they might get the approval. And if they got the approval, then they would be allowed to graduate early. I don't think we should force students to stay in high school when they have earned the credits necessary and are ready to move on. In other words, as spoken by the great prophet to the Pharaohs, "Let my people go." When a student has demonstrated they are ready to move on and they have earned the credits necessary, let's do just that. Let's let them go. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Crummell, do you wish to close? Oh, Representative Edwards. David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does carrier yield?
Well, I was ready to answer questions, but yes, I will.
He does.
Thank you, good representative from Wilsonville. I have one simple question. Are there any cases of a student who has been denied graduation by a local school board?
One moment, Mr. Speaker.
Someone who's met the requirements? You must know.
Off the top of my head, I don't think of one where a person was actually denied. However, what has happened is that the process becomes very cumbersome. And what this bill will do is when a student requests an apparent consent, it makes the process a very simple process for the student to be able to graduate early.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Crummell, do you wish to close?
No, actually, I think if everybody will just vote for it, then we can go home earlier.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes no. House Bill 2606, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill. Chair requests unanimous consent that House Bill 2618 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Thursday, May 17, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2774 relating to ignition interlock devices.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2774. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Well, I guess I don't need to say that. House Bill 2774A modernizes the state's ignition interlock statutes and will put Oregon at the forefront in using this technology to reduce drunk driving. Ignition interlocks are the devices that require one to blow into a valve in order to start a car, and they generally require that a person's breath register little or no alcohol in order for that car to be started. I was pleased to work with Ann and Bruce Pratt and Steve Dole of Crime Victims United, as well as Mothers Against Drunk Driving, in bringing this bill forward. The original bill was a placeholder while we conducted our research on how best to update our ignition interlock statutes. Thanks to the work of the Pratts, MAD, and Judiciary Committee intern Miranda Plummer, we crafted the A and Gross version that essentially replaces the original bill. The Pratts received input from the Lane County District Attorney's Office and local judges, and I received input from the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, which is neutral on the bill. House Bill 2774A does two things. One, it requires that a person use an ignition interlock device for 1 year after their driving privileges have been reinstated following their first DUII conviction. 1 year of ignition interlock use for one conviction. Two, it requires that a person use an ignition interlock device for 2 years after their driving privileges have been reinstated following their second conviction. 2 years of ignition interlock use for 2 years of conviction, or for two convictions. The cost involved to the offender is approximately $70 for installation, plus $70 per month, plus an occasional recalibration that costs $20. And colleagues, Mr. Speaker, the best thing about this bill, in my view, is that it places the cost squarely where it belongs, on the offender, not on the general public. Plus, it allows people to maintain their pro-social aspects of their life. For example, it will not interfere with one's ability to drive to work. Colleagues, this bill is good for public safety, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I rise in support of House Bill 2774 agree with the comments made by the carrier about the importance of this bill. And I just want to share that on the morning that we heard this bill, I received two emails from Washington County on the very morning we heard this bill. One was a crash into a semi-truck and trailer, a female driver trapped in her car, transported to the hospital with life-threatening injuries. It does appear that alcohol was a contributing factor. And the other one, a serious injury accident. One man has been detained on suspicion of driving under the influence. Colleagues, we spend a lot of time in judiciary and in this building talking about what happens in the criminal justice system. This is one instance where we truly can prevent accidents and injuries. If these people had to blow into a device, they would have been sitting in their car in a parking lot, not able to start their car. But truly, this is a bill that we can pass that will help prevent these serious injuries, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
I have a scenario, and I wonder if you could respond to this. At the end of the time when the driver's license is suspended, for this bill requires that a interlock device be used in order to drive. If the offender does not drive during that 1 year interlock period, does that satisfy this bill?
To the good representative from Hillsboro, I believe it does. I think that the use of the ignition interlock device would only be required from 1 year after the suspension has expired.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Shields, do you wish to close?
I do not. Thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dahlem, how do you vote? Dahlem votes aye. Okay. House Bill 2774, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent that House Bill 3077 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Wednesday, May 16, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3099, relating to safe drinking water.
Representative Kotek. Oh, I didn't. The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3099A. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move House Bill 3099 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Kotek moves House Bill 3099 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's come to my attention and also to Representative Greenlick that we could benefit from a little more discussion around the fiscal aspects, and we'd like to have it go back to Ways and Means.
Further discussion? Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do support this motion. And I want to remind you all how important it is to move this back to Ways and Means and to perfect it. It's an urgent bill to perfect because every health organization in the state supports it. And because it's very important to get it back to Ways and Means and get it back to us in a way that we can pass it and really attend to the dental health needs of the poor kids of the state. This is an urgent bill, and the referral to Ways and Means will help us move it and move it appropriately. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also agree we need to send it back, get it fixed, make it right, get it out of here, because you've all heard the term, and I don't use it because I don't like it, go home, my take home bill. This is my I get to go home bill.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kotek, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
She does not. Those of the opinion that House Bill 3099 should be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion having received the required majority is declared adopted. House Bill 3099 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3182, relating to business entities and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3182. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today to bring House Bill 3182 to the floor. This bill received a unanimous do-pass recommendation from the House Judiciary Committee. House Bill 3182 creates a task force on business entity information to review and make recommendations about the form and content of beneficial ownership information to the state of Oregon should, or that the state of Oregon should require from business entities who register with the state. This task force will be made up of members from the FBI, IRS, Department of Homeland Security, the Oregon Department of Revenue, the Secretary of State, the Department of Justice, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the Oregon Bar Association, and a representative from the business community. Colleagues, Oregon has become a destination for criminals seeking to launder their ill-gotten money. Oregon, along with Delaware and Nevada, are recognized by the FBI as one of the easiest states to incorporate shell companies for questionable and illegal activities. To form these shell companies, all an individual needs is a willing local agent and a filing fee. These agents establish these companies with no more than an Oregon mailing address and an agent, often someone in another country. These companies do not pay taxes oftentimes or report income or have an office or any employees in Oregon, but are able to transfer assets around the globe. The Secretary of State has worked closely with a number of law enforcement agencies over the last 2 years, including the FBI and Oregon's Attorney General, in their investigations involving Oregon-registered companies and illegal money laundering activity. The Secretary of State's office agrees that money laundering is a serious crime and has concerns that some Oregon-registered companies are being established for the sole purpose of shielding the identities of the individuals conducting the illegal money laundering activity. Most frequently, we saw local registered agents acting on behalf of individuals in foreign countries registered new Oregon limited liability companies. In a typical example, the registered agent will provide an Oregon street address as required by statute, and the LLC members or manager will be an individual located in a foreign country, like Belize. The company will have no other association or relationship with Oregon, other than we are the state where the company was created and domiciled. This allows the company to gain instant credibility throughout the world as an American company, even though they have no operations or employees in Oregon or the United States. Colleagues, Oregon is being used to export fraud. The Department of Consumer and Business Services find that corporation filings are routinely made in Oregon using prohibited words such as bank, trust, or terms implying financial services without the approval of DCBS. Unless approved by DCBS, ORS 56023 prohibits a business from filing a name such as bank, bank corp, bank spelled with a K, bank spelled with a C, banker, banking, trust, building and loan, or other equivalents in English or any other language implying a business primarily engaged in the lending of money or sale of financial products. Although the department has issued cease and desist orders in approximately 50 cases over the past 2 years against company violating this requirement, there have been at least 75 new filings made since 2006 that use words that have been prohibited. DCPS has found that the streamlined incorporation process in Oregon make corporation filings a very profitable commodity. Many of these false business names are created specifically for sale overseas, passed off as Oregon banks, trusts, or financial service companies, misleading consumers around the world. The FBI notes that Oregon corporate shells are, along with the states of Delaware and Nevada, highly valued overseas as part of the industry of questionable or illegal businesses. One recent case, the Coast Guard of the Federal Security Service of Russia recently stopped a ship engaged in illegal fishing off the Siberian coast when the Russians found a packet of Oregon Corporation documents for Beltok Holdings, LLC. They asked for the cooperation of the U.S. Coast Guard. The company filings were made by an individual who specializes in forming Oregon corporations for a fee, but the documents did not provide any useful information about the corporation. The mailing address was actually a convenience store, the address used as a mail drop routinely used by the individual for filing these corporations. There was no Oregon corporate office or any Oregon nexus to the corporation. One of the American citizens presenting himself as the registered agent for this Oregon company is the registered agent for over 10,000 registered corporations. In another case, DCBS was contacted by a German national who had been approached by individuals portraying themselves as representatives of an Oregon bank. DCBS was able to provide no information about the company other than to verify that it was not an actual financial institution operating in Oregon, despite the corporation's name. As in the other case, the addresses listed in the Oregon corporation filings were all bogus, and there was no actual Oregon corporate office. A website called the U.S. Corporation Services is exclusively in the business of promoting the advantages of U.S. incorporation. They advertise that as the owner of a director of a U.S. corporation, you cannot be held personally liable for its business obligations and activities. And note that the U.S. has greater liability protection for a company versus incorporated in most European countries, and that the process is far cheaper in the U.S. and without substantial capital. The website also notes that a corporation can bear the name of a person and have a bank account and a U.S. tax number in this name. The U.S. Corporation Services recommends only 6 states in which foreigners should create corporations. They note, if rapid action is important to you, Utah, Oregon, and Montana are recommended. Colleagues, one of the best things about this task force, it has no fiscal impact. And I think it is time that the state of Oregon take a look at how we are exporting fraud. And I believe this is a good bill, and the Secretary of State's office, the DCBS, and many law enforcement agencies would really like to take a closer look at this, and this task force will make it happen. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Boquist.
Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Was there any discussion in committee on why the Oregon Homeland Security Council wasn't already addressing this issue?
I don't see the committee administrator handy, but and I wasn't there for the whole thing, but I don't think so. Not while I was there, anyway.
Follow-up question, Mr. Speaker.
Follow-up question. Is the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
Can you explain the rationale for and the requirement for a security clearance from all of the members from Department of Revenue, Commerce, so on and so forth?
No, I can't.
Follow-up question, Mr. Speaker.
Further question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
Is there a rationale of why there's not a member of the legislature on this task force if it's going to make recommendations based on having secret meetings?
Is there a rationale for this? Probably no rationale other than the expertise in looking at these sorts of issues is pretty specialized, and I wasn't aware of any legislators that have that specialty, maybe one.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
My apologies to the carrier first for not coming forth beforehand, and I just caught this morning. This is a good idea, and I think the carrier has explained that quite well. However, I'm going to be an absolute no vote on this, and I want to go back to the 56 members of the last legislative session, which passed House Bill 2101 across this floor and created the Oregon Homeland Security Council. The Oregon Homeland Security Council is comprised of many of the members that are on the bill today to include legislative oversight. That Oregon Homeland Security Council is also tasked to perform duties like this bill is addressed right here. But unfortunately, to date, the governor hasn't fully implemented or even had a single meeting of the Oregon Homeland Security Council. And I know that because two members of this chamber, including myself, are on that council. While this is a good idea, the question remains, we have an organization that's supposed to be looking after homeland security and security issues and advising each agency on exactly this sort of function and have legislative oversight, because if you'll notice in here, you have people are going to have security clearances and they're going to come back here and then look at us and say, well, this is a really good idea, but we can't tell you why. And, you know, in the business of spooks and spies and security and police and investigations, and the former troopers that are here, several of them here on the floor, know that those sorts of things happen. But if you're going to have somebody come back and say, this is a really good idea, but I can't tell you why, the preference would be to have a member of ours who has maybe served in law enforcement, who has been on the Bar Association or law enforcement, who can come back, who has that security clearance and can give us that information. I frankly, you know, had I caught this, I would have gone to committee and testified against it. I mean, we already have an entire council that the governor is supposed to have in place that's supposed to do this function, and I urge an absolute no vote on this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Olson.
Question to the carrier, Mr. Speaker.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
Thank you, Representative. Section 1. Sub A. You have described there the Secretary of State shall appoint at least one representative from the federal government or from the FBI as well as from IRS. Could you describe to me the authority that the Secretary of State has to do that to a federal government agent?
Mr. Speaker, could I get a clarification on that question again? I don't know if I quite heard it right.
Clarification requested?
Absolutely, Mr. Speaker. Just real simple, Section 1, Sub A, the Secretary of State shall appoint at least one representative from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, at least one representative from the Internal Revenue Service. You have two members from federal agencies. How does a state agency do that, and what authorization is that?
Well, I guess there's no compelling reason for the federal agencies to comply, but I think he could still appoint them. You know, hopefully they would agree to do that. They have been working with these federal agencies already who have expressed interest in doing this sort of thing. So, you know, I'm sure the federal agencies aren't compelled to comply to the Secretary of State's appointment, but I'm certain that he could still ask them. If they would take that appointment.
Follow-up question.
Further question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
Okay. Just a real simple question. FBI as well as Internal Revenue Service has been at the table discussing this bill?
I don't know that they've specifically discussed this bill, but I know they've been in conversations with the Secretary of State's office and DCBS on issues around these shell corporations from Oregon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion. Representative Holby, do you wish to close?
Yes, I do, Mr. Speaker. I really appreciate the input and, you know, some skepticism about this bill, you know, and notwithstanding the Security Council that the good representative from the 23rd District came up with. They should all absolutely be involved in this issue. But this task force is aimed specifically at the kinds of information that the Secretary of State and DCBS collect on these shell corporations, specifically as it relates to, you know, identifying what's going on with the revenues, what's going on with the ownership of these, to actually facilitate an organization such as the representative from the 23rd District has described, and to facilitate law enforcement agencies in doing their work. I think that is a really essential
because their expertise is looking at the corporations. Their expertise is regulating banks. Their expertise is doing that. But we don't gather the information to give to the security councils or to give to the law enforcement agencies. That's the frustration. So this task force is just to look at that. How can we do that so that we can facilitate the security councils, Homeland Security, so that we can facilitate the law enforcement agencies in accomplishing these things. It's frustrating when the federal government comes to the state of Oregon and we can't answer the questions about the corporations and the limited liability companies that are formed in this state. You know, I think that this bill and this task force created by this bill would actually facilitate that whole concept. I think it is important to mention that this task force will not represent a burden for honest companies either. That's one of the goals, is to make sure, how do we do this without putting a burden on the legitimate corporations and LLCs that operate in the state of Oregon, but give us the ability to scrutinize those that appear to be operating in illicit activities abroad, especially when a lot of the folks that are involved in these companies are overseas and we have no information about them. So I'm hoping the good representative from the 23rd District would embrace this bill and maybe work with this group in that direction. I appreciate your eye vote on this bill. I think it's a good thing and an important thing for the state of Oregon to look at and really help our image across the nation with our federal partners and around the world. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Burley votes no. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Flores votes aye. Representative Crummell, how do you vote? Crummell votes no. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes no. House Bill 3182, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3242, relating to construction contractors.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3242. Representative Riley.
Mr. Speaker, I move House Bill 3242 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Riley moves House Bill 3242 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. After this came out of committee, it was determined that this had a high enough fiscal that it should go to Ways and Means, and I would hope that we can put it there.
Further discussion? Representative Riley, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion that House Bill 3242 should be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 3242 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Chair requests unanimous consent that House Bill 3252 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Wednesday, May 16, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3279, relating to student journalists and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3279. Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3279A comes to you from your House Committee on Judiciary, where it passed on a 6-2 vote. I want to thank the chair from Lake Oswego and the committee for their efforts in assisting the production of what became a consensus bill that included supporting testimony from both COSA and OSBA. This bill is as much about clarifying school district policies as it is about the First Amendment and the education and training of student journalists. The bill seeks to clarify the rights and responsibilities of student journalists, journalism teachers, school administrators, and local school districts. The bill will result in school districts adopting written policies concerning free expression. In the wake of two key court cases, Hazelwood versus Kollmeyer and Hostie versus Carter, there is a great deal of uncertainty for student journalists, their teachers, administrators, and school districts. As a result, to date, six states, Kansas, Iowa, California, Arkansas, Massachusetts, and Colorado, quite an eclectic group there, have all enacted laws protecting student journalists and providing greater clarity to teachers, administrators, and school districts. House Bill 3279A covers both high school and post-secondary student journalists, since court cases have created uncertainty at both levels. The bill clarifies that student journalists with media advisors and journalism teachers in their advisory role are responsible for determining the content of school-sponsored media subject to limitations laid out in Section 1 of the bill. In a compromise with the Oregon School Boards Association and the Confederation of School Administrators, the term advertising content was taken out of the bill, since school districts often have contractual agreements with advertisers. The bill permits students to bring a civil action to seek a nominal $100 in damages and to provide injunctive and declaratory relief. The idea behind this approach is that it will prevent those without a legitimate claim from bringing suit, while also allowing a family to find the assistance of a public interest attorney to assert their First Amendment rights. I would urge all of you, colleagues, to please take a very close look at page 2, Section 1, lines 14 to 23, as it spells out in detail unauthorized expression and exceptions to the First Amendment right of student journalists. House Bill 3279A is a consensus bill that provides clarity to school districts and administrators, affirms the rights and responsibilities of student journalists in Oregon, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of House Bill 3279A, and the good representative from Tigard explained why this bill is important. I want to explain a little bit about what happens under the bill. First, I want to acknowledge my constituent, J.D. McIntyre, the president of the Oregon Journalism Education Association and a high school journalism teacher who came in and talked to us in committee about the importance of this bill. The representative from Tigard explained how nothing in this bill authorizes any libel, slander, invasion of privacy, etc., and I do encourage you to look at those provisions. The original bill had an attorney fee provision in it, so that a student or his or her family who brought an action against the school could recover attorney's fees, and it also had an immunity provision. For the district would have been immune unless they altered or a teacher altered the content of the student publication. Those were problematic for a couple of reasons. We thought that the immunity provision didn't make sense because it is a school-based activity. And I supported taking the attorney fee provision out of the bill. And what that will do is allow a student who really has a good case to go find an attorney to work on a pro bono basis, their attorneys who specialize in constitutional law, to bring the case. That's going to discourage cases that don't have merit. And the reason that for the $100 statutory damage provision that's in the bill, you may recall we had a bill earlier that dealt with the capable of repetition yet evading review doctrine. The $100 damages will keep the case alive so that, for example, if the student brings the case and then graduates from high school with a $100 damage claim, that case should stay alive even if the student has graduated. The court won't find that the case is moot. So this is a good compromise bill. As I explained, the good representative from Tigard talked about what is prevented and permitted in the bill. And this is, in the end, very fair and balanced, and I encourage your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Kump.
To the bill, Madam Speaker.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, this bill, at first I was frowning, and most of you have seen my principal frown. But the reality is I really can support and do support this bill because in Section 1, towards the end on page 2, it has clearly stated that students cannot do something that is libelous, slanderous. It cannot constitute an unwarranted invasion of privacy. And in particular, as of course they would never do this in high school, but print something that would cause harm or danger. Right. It does give a school administrator many of the same responsibilities that we have today in order to make sure that our school is safe. But so this does not stop people from expressing their rights, and I obviously am supportive of that as we all stand here today and do that. And so I hope that we can continue to make sure our students are allowed to do that, particularly in secondary schools and higher ed. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I rise to speak in favor of House Bill 3279A. Just because this bill applies to students doesn't mean that they don't have First Amendment rights. My view in this bill and that general proposition were shaped by my own experience many years ago as the editorial page editor of the Albany Union High School Whirlwind, in which I had placed some thoughts in a series of columns that were deemed to be inappropriate by the journalism advisor and the administration of my school, and I was removed from that position. And I've always thought that that wasn't the way that we should be running our high schools. I don't think there was anything that was inappropriate in a school newspaper that I was publishing. And I think that we should be encouraging our young people to be engaging in free and open debate about the issues. I think the fact that they're young doesn't mean that they can't express themselves in an appropriate way. And I think this bill has appropriate limitations on inappropriate expression. And so I clearly support it.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I was a no vote in the committee for two basic reasons, and I do have the Constitution of the United States in front of me with the First Amendment about making no law, and I won't read the details of that. But there's two reasons. One is free speech, freedom of the press. As you read something in the Oregonian or you read something in the Statesman Journal here in town, it's regulated. It's regulated by the owner and the editor of that paper. And if somebody writes something in their eyes that's wrong or they get enough complaints, that speech gets shut down. Still free speech. The second reason is as a parent and one who represents many parents who work really hard to teach their own children, my children, that yes, we have free speech But with that comes a responsibility to use the right words. And the consequence of those words can never be, those words can never be taken back. So I work real hard to teach my children. Constituents work hard to teach their children. And when they go to school, I expect the people who are also teaching them in school to help me with that. This bill takes that out of my hands, takes that out of my constituent hands, and puts it in our courts.
Further discussion? Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thanks. I rise in support of House Bill 3279, and I wanted to just touch briefly on the question of what this means in a school context. Now, it's been my experience as a teacher that students respond best when they have real-life responsibilities with real-life consequences. I think this bill is a step in that direction. And I want to read briefly from the testimony of a local high school journalism teacher who told the committee, quote, "I can't describe how frustrating it is to teach kids about writing leads, interviewing sources, and designing newspaper pages for a whole year, then having to break the bad news to them that unlike every other person in the U.S., they don't have the most basic of rights, the right of free speech. I find it ironic that as educators we are asked more and more to prepare kids for the, quote, real world, and to train kids so they are employable or ready to enter college upon graduation, yet the real world does not exist in the high school journalism room. I appreciate the concerns that the good representative from Salem has expressed, and I think this is it's a tough question for us as policymakers. I don't think there's an easy or obvious answer on this. I do think this gives license, perhaps, for students to publish on controversial subjects. I think it gives license for students to make mistakes, including ones that may be hurtful to some. There's some who have suggested that this will contribute to additional triviality in our student press, and I'll read from a report on the state of student journalism that said, quote, "Censorship is the fundamental cause of the triviality, innocuousness, and uniformity that characterizes the high school press. Where a free and vigorous student press does exist, there is a healthy ferment of ideas and opinions with no indication of disruption and negative side effects." And so I guess just come back to my own experience that when you give students independence and responsibility, when you take them seriously, when you treat them as if they have the maturity to handle thorny, complex issues seriously, even if sometimes they struggle with that, they'll very often rise to the occasion. And when they don't rise to that occasion, a good educator will be nearby, and they will in our high schools, not to yank those freedoms away, but to help the student exercise those freedoms responsibly. So again, I appreciate the connection of rights and responsibility, and I do urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I guess it would be ironic if I said no, but I'll say, sure, let's have free speech and debate. Yes, I will yield.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate that. Will this bill allow a student to claim censorship or violation of Oregon law if an advisor tells a student that they have to change their article for whatever purposes, I would assume journalistic purposes?
The short answer is no. In other words, as it says in Section 1, first of all, student journalists are working with their media advisors or journalism teachers. And so there's a dialogue going on there, and there are going to be discussions. So it would have to rise to quite an elevated level before there's going to be any kind of a lawsuit. I'm finished.
Representative Kremel?
One second, please, Madam Speaker. I'm just trying to make sure that I understood what I thought I heard. I have another question to the carrier.
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
He does.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. I'd like to draw your attention to line 28 on page 2, about the middle of the line. It says, upon a motion, a court may award $100 in damages and injunctive and declaratory relief to prevailing plaintiff in a civil action brought under this subsection. So does that mean that the court is required to give relief, or does it mean that the court, if they feel like it, can give relief to the plaintiff?
Neither. It's not if they feel like it or they're not required. It would be a judgment based on the facts brought forth to the judge.
Further question?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Final question.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. And the most that a student plaintiff can get is $100.
You are correct, sir.
To the bill, Madam Speaker.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I have some concerns about the bill. And having been the sports editor of the Pioneer Log at Pioneer Junior High in Walla Walla, Washington, and however many years ago that was, I can certainly understand and relate to the students' freedom of expression and wanting to make sure that they put the news out in a meaningful way, and that the students learn journalism, and they learn proper English, and they learn how to get their point across, and they also learn what responsible journalism is, and that the journalist has a responsibility not only to the paper for which they are working, but they also have a responsibility to the public that reads their paper. I'm concerned about this, though, because of a couple of things that I am reading in here. And one is with regards to the court. In talking with Clackamas County Courts, one of the things that the presiding judge told me is very frustrating to the court system is when the legislature decides to put words like may into the statute because they don't know quite necessarily how it should be interpreted. So if we want them to give them $100, then let's tell them to give them $100 if they prove their point. Period. Let's not have this may in there because, quite frankly, it becomes confusing to the court. The second thing that bothers me is reading in the staff measure summary. And I'll bring your attention to this. And it says the Supreme Court also has concluded that schools have legitimate interests in deterring disruptive forces within the school environment and ensuring that students do not interfere with the school's basic educational mission. Thus, the expressive rights of students are not the same as the rights of adults in other settings. I agree that students do not leave their or shed their constitutional rights at the door. But the rights that they have are slightly different when they're in the school setting versus when they are out in public, or that the adults have when they are out in public. The other thing that concerns me is in the last line under background, it says House Bill 3279 would limit a school's authority to exercise editorial control over school-sponsored media more than is required by the First Amendment. So what if I'm reading this correctly and if I'm interpreting this correctly, what this is telling me is that basically a student can say, I have my constitutional right. You have violated my constitutional right, Mr. Teacher, because you told me that I have to change my article. And if I change my article, in my opinion, it all goes out the window, and therefore you have destroyed my constitutional rights to free expression. Or if the principal goes to the teacher, who, by the way, can't be fired for upholding this, which is good, but if the principal goes to the teacher and says, you must, under journalistic purposes and correct English purposes and whatever other purposes you need to use, the student should not be, your students should not be publishing this kind of material, then that principal's authority is being abridged. And I have a real problem with that. You know, years ago, we started taking discipline out of the schools, and I think it created a lot of major problems for us. I view this as taking more discipline out of the schools, giving the students reasons to sue the school district and their principal and their teacher, and there is no defense to the teacher or to the principal or to the school district. I'm not viewing this as a real positive bill, ladies and gentlemen, and I hope you won't either, and so I'm going to vote against it. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Honorable colleagues, I'll be brief. I voted no in committee. I'll vote no on the floor tonight. I worked on the school high school newspaper, college paper. I'm against this bill because it combines high school and college newspapers. We're setting the same policy for a 16-year-old that we are for a 30-year-old. Second, I object to it because on my committee in education, we've already passed out a bill that's going to stop cyberbullying and bullying people on the Internet. But right around, we're going to pass this bill that says it's okay to bully people on the school newspaper. Well, that seems in conflict. We had a student come to our committee as a guest of Representative Greg Smith, and we talked to him, asked him questions about that, and he said he thought it was wrong to criticize the quarterback, his play, if that was not good for the school and the students. So again, for those three reasons, I'll be voting no. I hope you're listening to me and you're not just passing this bill. I think it's bad policy. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Question to the carrier.
Question of the carrier, does the carrier yield?
He does.
He does.
Thank you. Legislators are accountable to the electorate and agencies, to the taxpayers, et cetera. I'm just wondering what the, well, and then you have the freedom of the press. You've got the newspapers, like was mentioned from the representative from Salem, that is essentially regulated by the owner, the editor, and advertisers and is also by subscribers to that media as to whether or not they want to support it or pay for it. But in this instance, I'm wondering what the accountability measures are for students that essentially, with some exception, publish whatever they want without consequence.
Thank you for your question. I think it's quite the opposite, actually. The intent of the bill, and I think the result of the bill, and this would be very clear if any of the folks here had been at the judiciary hearing listening to the journalism teachers and the young student journalists. Number one, if you're part of a student newspaper, you're working with groups of other students, so you're accountable to your peers. You're accountable to the student media advisor. And just as all of us here are accountable for our words and our actions, there's a community there. And so they're not working in a vacuum. So any good journalism teacher will teach about responsibility as well as rights and community standards and being conversant with the views and opinions of your readers. So I think it's already happening, and the responsibility is in the marketplace of ideas in that community.
To the bill.
To the bill.
I just have a couple concerns that have been raised earlier, but it just seems to me like if you're just going to allow, you know, keep funding, this is a public institution, keep giving money to the journalism department to go ahead and just do whatever, to allow the students to only be accountable to each other, I don't see a real accountability measure there. And I don't, unlike the legislature, we can be unelected. Taxpayers can revolt against the agencies. I really don't see this ability here in this case. I certainly am a supporter of free speech. I just don't think this bill quite puts us in the right place. So I will be voting no. Thanks.
Further discussion, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I have a lot of respect for those colleagues who teach school, and so I've been interested in the comments from the representative from Wilsonville. I'm especially interested in the comments from the representative from the center of Portland because I like his thoughtful approach to teaching. And I will say, in regard to this bill, I am almost persuaded. My concern for this bill, in the context of what the representative from the center of Portland said, is what if and when there are not the kind of mentors and teachers that he described, such as himself, what happens when they're not there? That concerns me. I mean, for instance, you could have a different kind of teacher, perhaps like... Anyway, to the comments from the representative from the heart of Tigard, I was going to ask a question, and I won't. If he chooses to address this in his closing remarks, if he closes, I'd be fine. I was interested in why high school and college, which I think are vastly different in their approaches to journalism and their levels of sophistication and maturation, I wondered why they would be together in a bill like this, if he wants to comment on that. And lastly, as I said, I was almost persuaded, but I think I resonate with the representative from Salem, Almsville, and Turner when he says that our Constitution is in place and affords us the kind of free speech in this situation or any other. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Lim.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I will be brief. Time is getting late for dinner time. So... And as I read the bill, to the bill, and I like the bill, I said, it's a good bill, until when I come to the page 224, any student individually or through the student parents or guardian enrolled in public high school, you can sue whatever reason it might be for $100. This is not a way to teach about children. Whatever differences you might have, if it's written the way that through the mediation of the school or the district, that's the way to resolve any differences in it. I strongly believe, as you may know, free speech and right to speak. But I was going to vote for this bill because of this the clause that the suing business is not a good thing to teach our children. Let me give you my small wisdom. One of the wisdom I have, I try to stay away from doctors. To stay away from doctors, you gotta be healthy. If you wanna have a good life, stay from the court. In my 41 years of life of the United States, I never took anybody to court. Nobody took me to the court. So far, I'm happy man. So let's teach, if there's any differences, to work out in a compromise way through the school and through the school district, not to the court. This is a bad example to teach our children because of the clause, and even though I like the concept of this bill, I'm going to vote no on this. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Garrard.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I'd like to thank the representative from Tigard for bringing this bill forward. I don't speak an awful lot, but I got my start 45 years ago in radio journalism by being a writer on my school newspaper, and it's what taught me what lasted me for 45 years in trying to judge what to report on and what not to report on. I learned. This bill is about freedom of speech, freedom of thought, and being able to express that thought without censorship. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, this debate has gone on for a long time. To the bill. And,
to the bill.
For the last better part of the last hour, I've been thinking back and my drawing a little on my historical training and background. And I'm thinking of what we would be missing if some people that I reflect on, even though it may not have been popular, didn't exercise this right of free speech. I think of one, and I realize that not all of you are followers of the Christian religion, but I think of one particular individual in the Bible who was hung because of what he had to say. I think of individuals like Thomas Paine. The only reason he wasn't hung was because we won the war. And colleagues, if you take this away from people, we lose a lot. I think the one thing, sure, maybe sometimes they will offend us, as Thomas Paine offended the British. But it is through, for the students, it is going through these experiences that they learn. If everything that they're doing is just a nice, smooth, sugar-coated, there's not any real education in that. Like my good friend from Klamath Falls, he's never admitted it, but I know in talking to Zahner, former Representative Zahner, that my good friend from Klamath Falls did make a mistake or two when he was on the air. But that's how he learns. Colleagues, this is a good bill. I ask you to support it. And one of the things, I really was wanting to keep speaking so I could get some folks to yield for me, but I'm afraid there's nobody left in the room who is eligible to yield. I'll just close by commenting that it is debates like this, what democracy is all about, and it's debates like this that will help me win the pool that I have with Senator Schrader on when we sine die, which is August 6th.
And, Representative, I will note that several members were prepared to yield to you because they wanted to hear you go on talking, but you did not need those yields. So, congratulations. Further discussion, Representative Dallum.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. 10 years teaching, 25 years as superintendent. The issue at hand is a journalism class that the journalism advisor cannot control. The issue at hand is the principal in a school that cannot control the newspaper. We cannot, in good conscience, deny these tender minds the opportunity for free speech. I urge you to support this bill.
Further discussion? Representative Galizio, do you wish to close?
I do.
He does. Go ahead.
Representative from Beaverton, Aloha, said I should be brief, but I did want to address some of the points that were brought up, and I wanted to thank everyone who participated. I think this illustrates what we're trying to do here with this bill. It's number one on the question of we need to regulate expression. Absolutely, we need to regulate it, and this bill does so. It just mandates that it has to be, there needs to be a process, and it needs to be based on fact. Second, the question about undermining parents. Nothing in this bill prevents parents, adults, and supervisors from teaching students responsibility and having conversations about these issues. In fact, I would welcome that. I think that's a great thing. In terms of the court, the language in the bill that says may, judges like discretion, and they want to be able to look at the facts of the case before them, and so that's why the language is in the bill as such. Colleagues, we have a lot of bills, and I understand, I read staff measure summaries quite often, and I don't always read the entire bill. This is a short bill. Instead of talking about the staff measure summary, which I would argue is not necessarily the most accurate rendition of the bill, I would say read the bill. And if you read the bill, I think some of the concerns about the staff measure summary would go away. I would just remind you that COSA, Confederation of School Administrators, the Oregon School Board Association, both testified and are fine with the bill. Accountability. Students take a journalism class, they get a grade, they might even want to go to college. They're accountable to their peers, they're accountable to their community. From the question from my good friend from, where are you from? Oregon's Christmas Tree District. Why are high school and college students in this bill? Court cases have covered both high school and college, and there is uncertainty in both realms of education, and that's why we included both. Finally, to my good friend from Gresham, I would say, I understand, I don't like to go to court or the idea of going to court, but whenever your rights are violated, often the remedy is to go to court. The right to sue exists in the status quo. This is not going to somehow motivate people to sue. No alternative remedy was put forth in discussion. Colleagues, I think the representative from Klamath County was concise, articulate, and I would just say that I wanted to thank him again, and I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Patty Smith, how do you vote? Off the floor. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Off the floor. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Representative Nelson, off the floor. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Off the floor. House Bill 3279A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of House bills be carried over to their proper place on the Wednesday, May 16, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. Messages from the Senate.
Madam Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bills 438, 812, 10, 1002, and 1045.
First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5537 relating to financial administration from the Public Utility Commission declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 107 relating to emission fees for major sources and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 438 relating to animals. Senate Bill 480 relating to motor vehicle passenger safety and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 700 relating to public office and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 812 relating to people's utility districts. Senate Bill 1002 relating to search and rescue. Senate Bill 1045 relating to employers.
Bills read first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 73 relating to payment for collections of signatures on election documents. Senate Bill 173 relating to disclosure of tax information. Senate Bill 175 relating to tax penalties. Senate Bill 208 relating to licensure practice of naturopathic medicine. Senate Bill 209 relating to qualification for members of the Council on Naturopathic Physicians Formulary. Senate Bill 255 relating to reimbursement of personal injury protection benefits. Senate Bill 292 relating to corporate reporting. Senate Bill 439 relating to Oregon Racing Commission. Senate Bill 479 relating to school lighting and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 517 relating to students and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 531 relating to physician assistants. Senate Bill 556 relating to occupational safety violation procedures. Senate Bill 603 relating to requirements for directors, board of domestic insurers, and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 620 relating to naturopathic physicians. Senate Bill 678 relating to supervision of physical assistants. Senate Bill 746 relating to exempt operating cemeteries. Senate Bill 835 relating to workers' compensation and death benefits.
Bills read second time or passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills be carried over to their proper place on the Wednesday, May 16, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House? Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Representative Wisnett may change his vote on House Bill 2537. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Hunt requests unanimous consent that Representative Wisnett be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 2537. Is there objection? Hearing none. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote?
Aye, Madam Chair.
Votes aye. Further announcements?
Madam Speaker.
Representative Hunt.
I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Representative Boquist be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 2568. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Hunt requests unanimous consent that Representative Boquist be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 2568. Is there objection? Seeing none, Representative Boquist, House Bill 2568, how do you vote?
No.
Votes no. Further announcements? Representative Barker. Further announcements? Remonstrances? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I know the hour is late, but I want to talk about the bottle bill, but not right now. I do want to say to my friend from District 23, who I have a great deal of respect for, not only for his mental acumen and his political savvy, but mainly because I know he can disguise himself as a piece of my furniture in my office and do harm to me, that when he comments that certain representatives who are in law or in law enforcement might be qualified for the task force that Representative Hovley was going on and on about, that I just wanted to remind him that I took the FBI tour when I was in Washington, D.C. I was interrogated by an FBI agent, and I played one on television. However, my part was cut, and you could only see my car. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Holby. Further remonstrances, Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just want to let everybody know, yes, we have elected an actor president before.
Further remonstrances, adjournment, Representative Jensen, 10 a.m. Wednesday, May 16, 2007.
Madam Speaker, I move the House stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Wednesday, May 16, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Wednesday, May 16, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.